Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. And from Rambana and Ricci, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office, self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ricci, on the web at rambana.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
An ongoing gun debate, NRA lawsuits, national walkouts, bill signings, a quiet week after session, not on your life.
The state of Florida has now taken an important first step to enhance the safety of our schools. This is the beginning of the journey. We have paid a terrible price for this progress.
Also this week, the new state budget may appear to have more per pupil school spending, but not all Florida educators see it as a windfall.
Leon County schools will still be short about $600,000 in a budget that I think is $1.6 million increase from last year.
We'll also learn what bills didn't make it through this year's legislative session and discover that the student and parent activism ignited by the Parkland school shooting seems undiminished. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Within a week, Governor Rick Scott not only signed a gun safety bill into law, he also approved the new state budget, which includes millions of dollars for school safety purposes. Still, that didn't prevent the National Rifle Association from filing a federal lawsuit against a provision in the new safety law. And on the one-month mark of the Parkland mass school shooting, thousands of kids across the nation walked out of their schools. Some Parkland families also asked officials to put ideas on the ballot to ban assault rifles and have universal background checks. And lawmakers in Washington, D.C. may be moving forward on gun safety bills of their own. We get the whole story from Sasha Cordner.
The last time Tony Montalto and his wife came to St. Petersburg, it was for a happy occasion.
It was to see the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Eagle Regiment, the marching band and color guard together perform in the Florida State Championship. Our kids won the top spot that night, and we were all happy and so proud of them. Here we are less than 6 months later, after a 19-year-old with an assault-style weapon, which he was allowed to purchase legally, walked into Gina's school. That day, he ended the life of our 14-year-old daughter, three teachers, and 13 other children.
After Montalto's daughter, Gina, was killed in the Parkland mass shooting last month, he and other parents have gone to Tallahassee, Washington, D.C., and now St. Petersburg to make sure something is done. With Montalto at his side, the governor signed a new gun safety law in Tallahassee. Now Montalto is hoping the Constitution Revision Commission can do something as well. The CRC, which recently met in St. Petersburg, is a 37-member panel that meets every 20 years to revise the state constitution and put the matter before voters on the November ballot. One proposal the full CRC is expected to take up is similar to the new law signed by the governor. It includes raising the minimum age for anyone to buy a gun from 18 to 21 and a waiting period for the purchase. The goal is to avoid any legal challenges on the state level. The new law is already the subject of a federal lawsuit brought by the National Rifle Association because the NRA dislikes the age limit.
Should the voters choose to give their support to these safety measures, they will then be included in the Florida Constitution, where these hard-fought-for provisions will be more secure. Successfully challenging the Constitution of the state would be an extremely difficult legal task.
There's also a CRC proposal that includes an assault weapons ban and universal background checks, which Montalto told the CRC members he also likes.
I cannot help but think how different life would be today for our family had the changes in this proposed amendment been enacted before now. Please help make Florida a safer place. Put this proposed change on the ballot this year. Thank you.
Meanwhile, on the same Wednesday, Montalto spoke before the CRC. Thousands of kids from all across the country held walkouts to stand in solidarity with those who lost their lives in Parkland a month before, protest gun violence, and call for safer schools. From Chicago,
never again! Never again! Never again! Never again!
San Francisco. Or Seattle.
End gun violence!
End gun violence!
No more silence!
No more silence!
And of course, Florida. Governor Rick Scott also voiced support for the National Walkout Day, adding it was students who helped bring change to Tallahassee.
I want to thank the Parkland students and other students that came to Tallahassee to try to have an impact. We passed historic legislation that is going to put more law enforcement officers in our schools. We're going to put more mental health counselors in our schools. We're going to spend money hardening our schools. We're going to say if you have struggling with mental illness or threaten yourself or others, you're not going to have access to a weapon. I think all those things are positive. I think it's good that people are involved in the political process. The more people are involved in the political process, the great things will happen.
Scott, as well as Florida legislative leadership, have also said they're not fazed by the NRA lawsuit. That includes Senate President Joe Negron.
I feel comfortable that the 18 to 21 issue, which I understand is one of the major issues being litigated, that we already have that in our Florida Constitution for handguns. So our voters have spoken, and it's in our Constitution. And so I feel comfortable with the action that we took, and it'll be up to a judge and then probably an appellate court to make that final determination. But I feel confident in the bill that we passed, and I think it's constitutional.
And House Speaker Richard Corcoran, who may be mulling over a possible run for governor, agrees.
I say it all the time. I think I've been sued more times than any other presiding officer. And I don't think we've lost a case. I don't think we'll lose a case. I think what we did was constitutional. It was extremely impactful. And it will go down. And in 5-10 years, people will talk completely differently about the bill we passed, including the NRA.
But speaking recently on Fox 13 in Tampa, Florida Agriculture Commissioner and Republican gubernatorial candidate Adam Putnam stated he likely would not have signed the legislation.
I oppose the longer wait, which would not have altered anything about this situation. In fact, Governor Scott was also opposed to that.
So you would not have signed that into law?
And I oppose raising it from 18 to 21.
So you would not have signed that into law?
Likely not, because I oppose raising it from 18 to 21. I don't believe that that's the right approach.
Meanwhile, on the national level, the U.S. House and Congress has passed a bill that authorizes funds to provide more training for school officials and help law enforcement identify the signs of those at risk for violence. That's $500 million in grants over the course of a decade. The U.S. Senate could soon take up a measure as well, encouraging states to enter more information in a background check database. Another bipartisan measure spearheaded by Florida's U.S. Senators Marco Rubio and Bill Nelson includes strengthening background checks and allows for law enforcement to seize weapons of those deemed a significant threat. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Governor Rick Scott signed the nearly $89 billion state budget into law, and stakeholders in education are crying foul. Superintendents, teachers' unions, and gubernatorial candidates fear cuts to K-12 programs, and now they're condemning Scott after calls for a veto and a special session went unheeded. We get that story from Ryan Daly.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Gwen Graham is on the road campaigning in South Florida, but news that Governor Rick Scott signed off on the state budget stopped her in her tracks.
If the governor had any spine and wanted to do what was right for students across the state of Florida, he would have vetoed this education budget.
Legislative leaders initially touted a $101 increase in per-pupil spending, calling it unprecedented. But Graham joins educators across the state who say absent school security and mental health funding, base student allocation will see a 47-cent increase. She says students can't even buy a gumball with that.
It means that schools have to make significant decisions that negatively impact our students.
We are working off of less money, being asked to do more, given less resources, and we're still making our public schools great.
Scott Major is president of the Leon County Classroom Teachers Association. He says as operational costs like gasoline for buses and insurance for employees continue to rise, the future of school programs will be compromised.
They could be better than what they are if the legislature would provide the opportunity. It's not about money, it's about opportunities.
Major and Leon School Superintendent Rocky Hanna both say the funding tied to school safety won't be enough to cover placing a school resource deputy at every campus in the district. Major says the district will come up short by more than $500,000.
When you look at the school safety money, you'll find out that even in Leon County, it doesn't cover the cost of putting an SRO officer in every single school. Leon County schools will still be short about $600,000 in a budget that I think is $1.6 million increase from last year.
Governor Rick Scott stands by the K through 12 portion of the budget.
We do have more money for our students this year, but this year was an important year to listen to these parents, listen to these families, and focus on school safety, and that's what we did.
Meanwhile, Senator Bill Monford is saying it may be time to dip into the state's $3 billion in reserve money to supplement what he feels is a paltry per-student increase in funding. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
Still to come on Capitol Report, waves of nearly constant distractions meant far fewer bills than usual made it through the legislative gauntlet during this year's Florida lawmaking session.
Actually, it wasn't what passed, but maybe sometimes what doesn't pass.
Among the dead bills, one that would have ramped up Florida's response to human trafficking, although supporters think the debate helped raise awareness.
So many people have opened their doors, even when we just wanted to talk with them. Whether they're for it or against it, they've been willing to listen.
Rural communities overlooked by state allocations are seeking new solutions.
Our infrastructure requests to the legislature this year did not make it across the finish line.
And Tallahassee will see yet another march on the Capitol next Saturday by students and others who support changes to the nation's gun laws.
The youth are speaking up, and we need to be listening to them, and we need to be supporting them.
It was one of the least productive legislative sessions in recent times, at least when it comes to the number of bills Florida lawmakers approved. In addition to big issues such as sexual harassment and human trafficking, Lynn Hatter reports there were a bevy of other issues legislators decided to pass on for the time being.
Senate Rules Chairwoman Elizabeth Beniquisto says in the end, lawmakers just ran out of time when it comes to passing new laws to curb sexual harassment in the workplace.
The desire of folks like myself, Senator Book, and many folks in leadership and beyond in the next leadership class are very focused on that issue as well. It's just we've been hyper-focused on making sure we do all that we can for the communities that have been affected.
This year's lawmaking session began in the wake of two senators who resigned, one for an affair with a lobbyist and the other for sexually harassing a Senate aide and propositioning another lobbyist for sex. Two other senators also confessed to an affair with each other. Also among the pieces of dead legislation, a measure that would have allowed victims of human trafficking to sue hotels and businesses that enable it. Democratic Senator Lauren Book ended up having to defend her decision to pull her own bill.
You know, if my record and the things that I've done in the space of protecting victims of sexual abuse and assault wasn't so long and so personal to me, it is laughable. And so some of the ire that I've received from some individuals is misplaced.
And Representative Lori Slossberg, whose twin sister died in a car accident by a distracted driver, saw her efforts to make texting while driving a primary offense go down, despite last-minute efforts by fellow Representative Jackie Toledo to save it.
We've given the Senate ample time to act on issues that are important to women. These bills, you've given me feedback on what is important to us, and they failed us. They have not heard us, and we are not going to give up. We will not be silent, and we will fight back because these issues are important to all of us.
Those are just a few of the hundreds of measures that didn't go anywhere as the 2018 legislative session ground to a halt in the wake of the Parkland, Florida high school shooting. Plans to reform the state's insurance laws and crack down on contractors failed to the chagrin of many, but there were other failures that were celebrated. A Thousand Friends of Florida's Thomas Hawkins was sounding the alarm over a bill he says could have endangered local growth management rules.
We've been really focused in Orange County, where there's really sensitive environmental land near the Econ Wauhatchie River within 3 miles of University of Central Florida's campus. 883 would say, doesn't matter what the land looks like, it doesn't matter what the local government says, if it's within 3 miles of the state university, it's appropriate for urban development. We think that's a bad policy.
And many other proposals threatening the power of local governments also failed to the pleasure of groups like the Florida League of Cities and the Florida Association of Counties. This is interim City of Tallahassee manager Reese Goad.
there were a lot of bills that didn't pass that, you know, we felt like shouldn't pass, that you know, kind of infringed upon the ability to have local rule and retain a certain amount of local character and control over your community. So we thought that was good. Actually, it wasn't what passed, but maybe sometimes what doesn't pass.
Still, as with most issues, those that did not get through eventually make their way back. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Len Hatter.
A hard-fought battle over a bill aimed at combating human trafficking at Florida hotels and other businesses finally ended in the waning hours of the legislative session, but the survivors who watched the bill's death on the Senate floor were anything but discouraged. The measure would have allowed victims of sex trafficking to sue both their perpetrators and the establishments that showed willful blindness of the crimes taking place on their premises. Its fortunes had swung back and forth for weeks. Survivors gave their shocking testimony to committees, then became a constant presence in the Senate gallery. Because they'd been trafficked in hotels, they couldn't stay overnight in one, so they traveled back and forth to Tallahassee every day. Waiting in the gallery for the bill's final fate, Lindsay Ruth, who'd been trafficked by her ex-husband. She told Margie Menzel that no matter the outcome, the terms of the debate had changed.
There's so much more light on this than there has been, I think, ever. There are people here in the Senate that we've even heard saying, what is this human trafficking? Everybody is calling. There is a call to action now. And I think that that's what we've been needing. It's the push saying people aren't going to stand for this anymore, that we're going to be looking out for our communities, that we want our government to do what is right by putting these laws in place so that the people who are in the public can, one, be safe, and two, know that their government is behind stopping this.
How important was your testimony and that of other survivors in changing the public perception of this debate?
I want to believe that it was important. From my perspective, my testimony has never meant anything to anybody, but to be able to see that they listened and that they heard and that they were moved to do something, it means more to me than anything, because it means that it's validated, that I didn't survive it and get out of it. I'm only part of 5% that they heard me. I don't know what it meant to them, but it meant the world to me.
I watched the Senate Children and Families discussion, and clearly not only were they moved, but they were floored.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard from a first service. We've talked to them a lot about a first survivor's perspective. Our value doesn't come in dollars. Our value comes in our own self-worth. And so when they tell us how amazing it is that this is happening, it's kind of surreal because we've never had limelights like this in a good way. So the fact that so many people have opened their doors, even when we just wanted to talk with them, whether they're for it or against it, they've been willing to listen. And I think in listening, it gives them more knowledge to be able to do things in the future.
How hard was it for survivors to talk to the lawmakers in public and about the details of what happened to them?
It's a process. For us, it's about a 3.5-hour drive. That 3.5 hours is preparing time. And then the 3.5 hours home is recovery time, because it's not something that ever goes away. This is a lifelong process of recovery. So it's hard. It's really hard to do it, but we've come together as survivors, as warriors, to create a coalition that says you're not alone. So it's easier now that we have other survivors together than it has to have to do it by ourselves.
Although the bill died, lawmakers in both chambers agree there has been a sea change, and Representative Ross Spano, the Dover Republican who sponsored the House version of the bill, is running for Attorney General. He says if elected, his first move will be to push for a similar measure. A as lawmakers shifted their spending priorities this legislative session to school safety initiatives following the Parkland High School shooting. That left less money available for local water projects. And as Regan McCarthy reports, in many cases, the projects that did receive funding are generally located in South and Central Florida, leaving small rural North Florida communities high and dry.
HB 3225 will provide an appropriation request of $800,000 for the city of Gretna Water Booster Station. The city of Gretna is a rural area and a critical economic concern. Over the last 5 years, the city of Gretna...
Our infrastructure request to the legislature this year did not make it across the finish line.
Gretna City Manager Antonio Jefferson says the ask carried by Tallahassee Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander would have helped provide water to the nearby town of Greensboro and could have helped spur new development, something Jefferson says is sorely needed in his community.
One of the things that we're seeing in rural Florida, and I'll just kind of use the panhandle of Florida, excluding Jacksonville, you know, we have a declining population. We have challenges in providing adequate funding to our school systems.
Jefferson says a shrinking tax base in rural Florida is creating a vicious cycle. As more people move away, the local governments have less money to spend on development projects and school funding. That, in turn, makes their communities less attractive to businesses. So they close their doors, leaving people without work and eventually forcing them to move away.
It would be great if we got a better look each year from this legislature. A lot of the water money went to support those endeavors in and around Lake Okeechobee. Understand that. But at the end of the day, Florida, North Florida, still has those, not while they may not be identical, we still have needs to support our community so that our kids, our families can find North Florida as a place to not only just retire, right, and raise your grandchildren, but, you know, children that's leaving school can find opportunities here in their own community to build and grow a family, build and grow a business.
Jefferson says while the circumstances surrounding this year's budgeting and the reasons for the legislature's spending decisions were unique, the outcome was not. Rural communities tend to be overlooked while large cities get more notice. And Jefferson says part of that is just how the legislature functions. The more people a community has, the more voices they get to represent them in the state government. But Jefferson says there are other potential partners for his city's project, like the Northwest Florida Water Management District. Brett Cyphers is the executive director.
The water projects are a good thing to have, and they're great for the local legislators that are trying to get these needed projects at home. But that's only one of the places where that money comes from. We do the same types of projects with those same folks, the senators and representatives, as well as working with DEP to do a whole wide range of projects. So though the amount may seem small from the budget standpoint, from our budget standpoint, it actually becomes a lot more expansive.
Cyphers says his organization's budget has been growing over the years, and combined with the money lawmakers allocated for spring restoration projects this year, he says there's enough money to help a lot of local communities, like Gretna, get their projects underway. Meanwhile, Jefferson says he plans to continue working to raise the voice of rural Florida. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Matt Harris and his family's hometown is Parkland, Florida, which, as the world now knows, is the home of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School.
So my sister's a sophomore at Douglas. I graduated from Douglas, 9 months ago?
Harris is now a student at Florida State University, so he was in Tallahassee when the text messages started coming from his younger sister on Valentine's Day.
She actually texted us first in a group chat with my mom and my dad, and she was like, I'm in a closet with a few teachers and a bunch of kids, and we hear there's an active shooter, there are helicopters, like it's real. And, you know, she was like texting, like, I love you in all caps, and like she really had no idea what was going on. She was terrified.
Harris says his sister and those she was with were not in the building with the shooter, but an acquaintance's sister and others weren't so lucky.
His sister was killed, and then one of my best friends, her sister was shot in the arm and the foot.
Next Saturday, March 24th, some of Harris's former Douglas classmates and many others will be heading for the National March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. Companion marches to demand changes in the nation's and state's gun laws will be happening as well, and that's where Harris saw his chance.
I really wanted to do the most I could wherever I was, and I saw that there hadn't been a Tallahassee march put together yet, so I decided to take the initiative and get that started.
What Harris started has now attracted an army of community helpers. Some, like Jean Ainsworth, also have a personal stake in the issue.
Enough is enough and never again. I have two small grandchildren right near Sandy Hook, and I have older grandchildren that graduated from Leon High School. It all came too close.
Ainsworth is hoping multiple marches across the country will move the needle in Congress.
We need changes in the gun laws that we have in this country. And the Parkland students are very grateful for the amount of legislation passed by the Florida legislature. We need some more things done at the national level.
Ainsworth's fellow Tallahassean Beth Dumond thinks the local march might also impress upon both national and state lawmakers that this is an issue that isn't going away anytime soon.
The youth are speaking up, and we need to be listening to them, and we need to be supporting them. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do here, is help the students here in Tallahassee make this event a success. They are demanding some common sense changes to help reduce gun violence, and we're demanding those things too, and we think that legislators need to be listening to them.
And for Douglas High alum, now university student activist Matt Harris, he's taking the long view.
It's my hope that in 10 or 15 years, then we can actually maybe even get an assault weapons ban passed.
Tallahassee's March for Our Lives begins at 11 the morning of Saturday, March 24th, in front of Westcott Hall, FSU's administration building. It will then proceed on College Avenue to the steps of the historic old Capitol, where thousands of students gathered a week after the Parkland shooting. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ryan Daly, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank other public radio stations in Florida. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And please join us each week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. And from Rambana and Ricci, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ricci, on the web at rambana.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.